Looking for work, better pay, better work environment? We can help. Call Kelly Jobs today at 502-425-7131 to speak with a recruiter today. Score a better job with us. Call 502-425-7131 or visit kellyjobs.com. That's kellyjobs.com.
Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Time now for Dan Issel and Louis Ribeau, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Dan and Louis.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. This is Issel and Louis, ESPN 680, 105.7, and the ESPN Louisville app. We appreciate you spending part of your morning with us. And, of course, as always, the first hour of the show is brought to you by our friends at Kentucky Tourism, KentuckyTourism.com. Good morning, Louie. How are you?
You know, Dan, I'm a little off today. How are you?
Well, you know how I know that?
The show sheet got sent from my car.
I mean, you know, that's one of the first things I look for is the old message from Louis Ribeau for the show sheet. A little late showing up today.
Yeah, I had done it on time. Everything, you know, my schedule was normal this morning. You talk about your high school basketball coach a lot. My high school cross country coach. So I ran cross country in high school to get in shape for ice hockey.
Yep.
I was never a great.
I did the exact same.
For basketball, yeah.
My whole high school time, I played all sports until my senior year. And then instead of going out for football, which was a joke anyway,
sure,
I ran cross country my senior year. That's hard work.
It is hard work. And there's so much more that goes into it than just running. You have to get good at pacing yourself and timing and learning who you can run with on your team. Or maybe you know your opponent's splits and so you run with them, or you try to – you know you can, you know, bait them into – there's all kinds of little things involved. I remember when I was teaching high school that I had a student who ended up running cross country at North Carolina, and she cut her apples into exactly the same number of slices every day. Like, you have to be – yeah, you have to be weirdly obsessed with numbers.
Have a routine.
Yeah, yep. That's exactly right. Yeah. And so my high school cross country coach passed away. And it wasn't a sport that I did because I loved or because because it was, you know, something that I knew I was going to be able to do at a high level. I think my best 5K time ever was like 15:50. So I broke 16 minutes, but I could never break a 5-minute mile. I could never, you know, I was not a fast runner. And his name was Larry Barcheski. And he was at our high school for 40 years. And people,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, people don't know. Where I grew up in the Rust Belt, the neighborhoods changed from when my dad was growing up to when I grew up in a really radical way in the urban areas. People, it was called, you know, white flight, moving to the suburbs and those kinds of things. And where I grew up, I went to the manual of my hometown academically, but we didn't have any sports. The high school wasn't big enough. So you had to play sports at the high school in your district. So for your neighborhood high school. And mine happened to be Central High School, Grand Rapids Central High School. And frankly, demographically, it's a lot like Louisville Central High School. And so I didn't fit in with the sports teams there as far as how I looked. Now, the guys were always great to me. I have lifelong friends from the sports teams at Central and all that. But Coach Barr was there when a lot of the kids who went to school there looked like me. And then he was there when almost none of the kids there looked like me. And he was the same guy all the time. And I look back on him now, Dan, and he gave such good advice to so many guys. So I ran cross country with a lot of guys who did what you did. They were trying to get in shape for basketball. And Coach Barr would go to them and he would pull certain kids aside, and I would watch him pull kids aside that were running sub 15s, just really exceptional times. And I remember one day a kid showed up who was a sub 15 runner. I mean, sub 5-minute miles, 3 miles in a row, just a really great runner in high school. And he showed up in penny loafers and khakis for practice. And Barr always kept, Coach Barr, we called him Coach Barr, he kept a clipboard and he would handwrite all of our times from practices. We had a very specific spot that we practiced. God, I still remember it perfectly to this day. And he took the papers, he ripped all of them up, he walked over to the trash, he put them in the trash, he broke his clipboard over his leg, and he put the clipboard in the trash. And he said, if you're going to treat your future like trash, then I'm not going to help you. And he left practice. And then the next day we showed up at practice and he was there and he had papers and he had a clipboard and we were ready to go. And that kid wasn't in penny loafers the next day.
I bet not.
And then he went to Aquinas College where I grew up for free and ran. And because he thought he was going to be a D1 basketball player and he was 5'8". And coach said, you got a natural kick. You're a great runner. You can be the first person in your family to go to college. And he did. He went to college. We're still friends. And I just remember over and over and over again, Coach Barr giving good advice to people all the time. And I remember him. So it doesn't matter. I had a very good high school hockey career. And when we finished, I had all of the records for hockey at Central. And I should find a picture for you, Dan, of our team. It was like 65% black guys, some Hispanic guys, and then, you know, me and another two white guys or something, you know, getting out there on a hockey rink. You know, it was pretty, my dad's coaching us trying to figure out what to do. And we had a over 500 season my senior year. We actually figured it out. We got it going. And he showed up at my graduation party. I didn't even invite him because I didn't want him to feel obligated. He's got hundreds of kids at his own high school. I didn't attend his high school. He just shows up. He found out when it was going to be. And he walked in. I saw him talk to my parents for a minute, and they came over to me, and he said, hey, I wanted to tell you, thanks for being the best hockey player who's ever played at Central. I said, oh, well, no, it's my pleasure. I love playing there. It was great. The guys were great. Our fans were great. You know, the sport was great. And he goes, no, I mean it. You could have gone and played travel hockey or juniors or whatever you wanted to do, but you stuck it out with guys who had never played before high school or had never done those things that you had done. Now, I started playing hockey, Dan, I was 3.5. They would give you little traffic cones, and you would push the traffic cone around the ice to stand up. Because think of like how a 3.5-year-old walks, not very well, right? So I played hockey. I mean, just almost, you know, my entire life until that point. And they shook my hand. He left. I never saw him again. I still remember the moment. Just those guys in your life. But what I learned from cross country was, I mean, like I. Weirdly, like you, it's funny that the show sheet wasn't on time today because I'm sure I make show sheets because of Coach Barr. Like what we learned from cross country about organizing, you know, your runs, I apply to so many things now. Like I own 3 companies, I'm about to own a 4th, and I couldn't do it if I hadn't run cross country. I wouldn't be able to do it the way that I do if I didn't have Coach Barr in my life. And so it's just been, you know, one of those people that you know. When you're like 15, 16, you're just figuring stuff out and it's a weird time in your life and they don't even put their arm around you, but they, you know, emotionally, spiritually put their arm around you.
Yeah.
And he was just one of these, I mean, and where I grew up, we had a bunch of tough Polish Catholic guys and Barr was one of those guys. And to see, it's also been cool reconnecting with people and you can tell, I mean, Dan, maybe 10,000 people affected by this guy.
Oh, for sure.
Right. I mean, 15,000.
Yeah, 40 years. Yeah. 40 years at the same high school.
Yeah, I mean, hundreds.
For sure.
And if you're involved in athletics, I mean, lots of kids play sports, and he coached football as, you know, as long as he was physically able and those sorts of things. And so just I wanted to – I know his family will never hear this and whatever else, but I know everyone listening that played a sport that had a great coach can identify with it. And so I just I hope he rests in peace. I hope his family's smiling about what a great life and what a great contributor he was. But I'll never forget what he taught me. Just running up and down hills in the middle of Grand Rapids, Michigan, man.
And it's great, Louis, that you know that you recognize that, and that you appreciate that. And as you said, he had that same effect on tens of thousands of kids.
No question.
But you don't know that everybody appreciates it like you did. But there are those people in your life, and it can be, it can be a relationship that lasts for 20 years, or it could be a relationship that lasts for a week and a half. But there are so many. You're fortunate if you have those kinds of people in your past.
I knew you would appreciate that story too, just because the really positive way that you've talked about your high school coach, and of course Coach Rupp and other guys that have been in your life. And but you know, it's interesting when it's the guy who coaches the team that you cared the least about, right?
Well, I recognize that there would never have been a Coach Rupp in my life if there hadn't been a Coach Vanderschnick to start with.
No question. Yeah. Sure. That's a great point. Yeah. So rest in peace to Coach Barr. I hope his family, he's well into his 80s now. I hope that his family knows that they're going to find out at the funeral home and at that funeral, because St. Isidore is going to be standing room only. I know that.
Yeah. So. Good.
All right. Good. That's all I got. I also, some of you have been very kind on the text line and Twitter and different things with my wife. And, you know, she had some health issues in the fall. We got some pretty encouraging news at the doctor yesterday.
Yes.
If I seemed off on the show yesterday, that's why, because we were waiting on those results. But we're at least, it feels like the roadmap is a little more followable now, if that makes sense. So I've had a, whoo, I'm all over the place this week, Dan. There you go. So appreciate people hanging out, because, you know, it's fun doing the show, but at the same time, it's
you have
got stuff going on
in your life. That was the best phone call I'd received in a long, long time yesterday, Louis. Yeah. I have to tell you that.
Yeah. So, whew, and it was my son Thomas's birthday yesterday. He turned 9. Louis turned 11 over the weekend. A lot of stuff going on, Dan. A lot of stuff going on. Plus, I gotta get ready for these horse races. You know, that's all kinds of stuff, man. So.
I'm really excited about this weekend. A lot of 100-point Derby qualifying races.
I don't want to spoil it, but I'm trying to set up. You know how Andy does? Andy has a cool segment called The Blitz, where he interviews someone from Kentucky, Louisville, and from IU every week.
Mm-hmm.
And he interviews them for like 8 to 10 minutes and just kind of gets, hey, what's going on with basketball? What's going on with football? It's a very good idea for a segment. I'm trying to get someone from all three of the American tracks to come on for 5 minutes on Friday. Boom, rapid fire.
Oh,
and we get their take. So Kevin Kilroy from down in Louisiana, he's going to be on the podcast tomorrow night. And then Caitlin Free from up at Turfway Park. And so trying to get all those people in line.
Terrific.
For Friday. I think that'd be a lot of fun, actually. So
yeah. It'd be great, great fun.
So there you go. So there you go. I'm sorry to derail the show so early. You know what? Pink's calling. Let's go. I have a feeling this is a man who can understand my story. Lloyd Gardner, how are you this morning?
Louis, this is more for you than me, and I'm sitting at my desk at school in my 51st year.
Huh, yeah.
And all the basketball I've been involved in, it's not my greatest story. My son, Chad, who Dan knows very well, was a little bit older than Sheridan, at 10 years old, said, I want to be a runner, not a baseball player.
Oh, okay.
2 months, 6 weeks later, he ran a 151 mini marathon at 10 years old. Then he ran a 129 at 12 years old. So I took up coaching cross country, and I never run a day of my life. I did later in my life run a 6K with my kids as one of my goals when losing weight. But anyway, Swag Hartel had just come to town, and Swag and I have become best of friends. And he wrote me up a program, said, this is what you need to do. So I'm meeting with the team in the locker room the very first day of practice. And I said, fellas, there's never been a team at Fairdale go to the state championship, the runoff in AAA for Fairdale High School, and that's our goal. Hmm. And so we're going out the back door of the locker room, and this little kid, he's 5'2", weighed 90 pounds, was born with disabilities, cross-eyed. He looks up at me and he says, Coach, he said, what do I got to do to go to state? And I said, Clifton, I said, if you can go to state one time during your 4 years at Fairdale, you'll be a great runner. So we made it to state that year. His sophomore year, he finished 26th in the state. His junior year, he finished 5th in the state. His senior year, the bus leaves with Captain Clifton being on it. And Clifton had promised the guys, I'll bring you donuts and orange juice. My sister works at Krispy Kreme. He didn't show up. I didn't know where he was, so I got in the bus and I left without my best runner. An hour before the race, Clifton comes running across the field, and he says, Coach, where's my shoes? I said, I didn't bring them, Clifton. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine I went to Western with was coaching the girls' team at Marshall County right next to me. And I said, you got a pair of shoes Clifton can borrow because his feet are really small. One of his girls gave him a pair of shoes that had a slit in the side. We were running at the Kentucky Horse Park, and it's surrounded by burning bushes. You go around. And the thing about Clifton, he could never remember a course. Mm. Never remember which, not even our home course. Mm. So they go by the first time, and I see Clifton. He's about 10th, and they go outside the track, and they come back, and these burning bushes are about 5-6 feet tall around the track. And I can see the kid from Trinity, the kid from Davis County, the two favorites. And I said, I have no idea where Clifton is. I ran up to the front finish line, and Clifton was 50 yards in front of everybody. And he won the state championship. 5'1", 90 pounds with disabilities. The greatest story that made me believe that kids can do anything. Don't ever underestimate what kids can do. And I had to share that today.
Big appreciate you calling.
Great story. Great story, Lloyd.
And Chad had some surgery, and Clifton runs 42 blocks in the rain just to come down and see him in hospital, Dan, when he was in Methodist. So the kid's very, very special to me. And when I was inducted into the Hall of Fame, I had Clifton as one of my guests, and he'll always be very special to me. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Lloyd. It's a great story. Yeah, you know, imagine people like Lloyd, 51 years at the same high school. Imagine the impact he's had on people that have come through those doors.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, Coach Barczewski is one of those guys. So behind the scenes here, we talk back and forth between guys who host different shows and different things. And I think one of the best things that Drew does on his show is he has that brag line.
Yeah.
And I think people being able to talk about their kids and brag about their kids, that's why when one of our listeners texted in that his son hit a home run for Kentucky State, like, I got excited. You know, one of the best things that Drew does is he has Lloyd on every week, right? And Lloyd's one of those guys. He's in a very different cultural situation than Drew grew up in, right? And that's fine to say. And so to have that guy on, but 51 years, you know, and then bar 40 years at the same place, like, regardless of who shows up. And I got to tell you, the school got pretty rough by the time I was there. And it was Barr that, if there was a fist fight, Barr was in the middle. Mm-mm. You know, and he was in his 60s. And, I mean, but didn't hold it against the kids, right? He knew that was what the culture was. And he just, man, I'm always in awe of people that can do things that I know that I couldn't do. And I could never do what Coach Barczewski did. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate Lloyd sharing that story as well. I mean, we associate Lloyd with, you know, King of the Bluegrass and with the great basketball players that have gone through there. But it is those guys that say, hey, how do I do this? And you say, well, I don't really know. We're going to figure it out together.
Well, yeah, we'll figure it out together.
And then
we'll figure it out together.
And those are the best journeys, man, for sure.
Yeah.
So no appreciate him sharing that story.
No question.
All right. Avery, let's go to break. And when we come back, we will do sports talk. All right. First hour of the show brought to you by our friends at Kentucky Tourism. I know that now. KentuckyTourism.com. Check out all those great spots around the state, including all the horse parks that Lloyd mentioned. Head out to those retirement horse farms with your kids and with your family and have a great time out there as well. Bourbon Trail, maybe you're setting up your summer plans and need to check out some of the state parks around the state. You can find all of that at KentuckyTourism.com. On the other end, is there another coaching shakeup at UK? And me, Vito Tisdale. And we'll talk about it next here on ESPN 680 105.7.
This segment with Dan Issel and Louis Rabeau is presented by KentuckyTourism.com.
And welcome back. It is Bologna or Salami Wednesday. And as the man just told you, this hour of the show is brought to you by Kentucky Tourism. When you're ready to explore the outdoors, there's no better place than the Bluegrass State. Hike forest trails, paddle through clear waters, or enjoy a horseback ride, or simply soak up the sights and sounds of nature. Looking for more thrills? Hop on a mountain bike, race through rapids, venture deep underground, or zip through the treetops. This is Kentucky. Come see for yourself. Plan your getaway today at KentuckyTourism.com.
All right. We do have some cool programming tonight. Mavericks and Warriors tonight at 7, followed by Lakers Suns. All that here on 680-1057. Then, of course, Louisville Sports Live. Our guys, Ethan Moore, Taylor Lynch across the hall from 7 to 9 on 93.9 The Ville. Find out who the backup left guard will be on the spring practice with the guys over there. Taylor Lynch will be shirtless. And so enjoy those guys over there on LSL tonight. And, of course, Jeff Wall and the Cards, they're off to the Sweet 16 Friday against Ole Miss. Later game because they are on the West Coast or in Albany, New York, apparently. You know, whatever. Getting out at midnight in Albany is apparently totally fine for Hoosier fans. 9:30 pregame. 10 o'clock network play-by-play with our guy Nick Curran. And then the YMCA postgame show with Dave Skull and Chrissy Banta. I don't know if they cut it yesterday, Dan. But Blanket Baker was just talking, and it was a very normal thing, and he wasn't trying to do it, but he said, Dave and Chrissy Skull. And I sent it to Sofaro, like, it's subtle, but it's funny. Like, it's great that suddenly they're married, even though, you know, Chrissy has a husband and a child and, you know, other stuff going on in her life, whatever. But, like, I hope he was able to cut Chrissy Skull, like, just really nicely clean, because it was right at the end of a sentence. It was right there for everyone to hear. And so I thought that was very funny. But no, you get Biscuit, you get Chrissy on the YMCA postgame. It's a late one on Friday. But look, they get Ole Miss instead of Stanford in that game, right?
Absolutely.
And so they're in a spot where I'm getting a lot of really nice text on the text line here, and I appreciate it. Texter, guys, what are we doing here? Is this the damn Oprah show? You're making me emotional. The first hour is brought to you by... Okay, I can't read that part. All right. great opening to the show. I'm sorry to hear about your former coach. Okay, but it sounds like he lived a good full life. He did. Also, happy to hear about your wife. The story about the state cross-country runner with disabilities, I always love listening to this show because I feel like it's the only place to hear those kinds of stories, and it sounds like you care. Well, I do. but I was just talking to the guys in the back who were listening as well and are working on some production stuff, and there's something, too, Dan, about male role models too growing up, right? They don't, and you and I are lucky guys. We had great dads growing up and guys that were around and involved and whatever else. But like, there's something about, you know, a community of men that can, you know, guide you along and help you with things as well. So
yeah, and at the time, it's completely lost on you.
That's
You have no idea it's going on, but you know, in later years, you realize who those people were and the impact that they had on the way you turned out, really.
The other text I'm getting, Louie, do you have any picks for the Super High Five at Gulfstream today? There's a $76,000 carryover. Those are my other people. Let's go, DJs. Yes. Yes. Wednesday at 10:30. Let's go. All right. So apparently we have the sound. Go ahead.
Dave and Chrissy Skull are going to be up late.
I don't know why that tickles me, but it does. Oh, man. That's great. Play it again.
Dave and Chrissy Skull are going to be up late.
Oh, man. That's great. All right.
Hey, so, if we played every stupid thing Blank said, you and I wouldn't get to talk for the next hour and a half.
We'd be second replay.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Chrissy Skull sounds like something Avery would put into True Crime Tuesday.
Yeah, it does sound like it would be some sort of like a killer nickname. Oh. It really does.
Oh, apparently Sofaro played it to end the show yesterday. Obviously, I had birthdays and different stuff going on yesterday, so I missed the show yesterday, but that's great. They also made fun of me for my driveway, Dan. Because you enjoy making fun of me because I figured out how to not own a pool or a dog and all these kinds of things, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I spent $400 in my driveway. What I realized is other people don't have these, have like asphalt driveways that they have to have resurfaced every couple of years. That's what I was talking about, by the way. I don't have like a 3-foot by 6-foot driveway that cost $400 if that's what people were worried about. Right. Apparently, there was a fair amount of confusion there. But then, you know, I mean.
No, yeah. You've got, I mean.
Stop. We're good. Yeah.
You could open up a used car lot on that driveway. Are you kidding me?
It's a good spot for a basketball goal,
yeah.
Frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah, not a lot of nice places. A lot of three on three going on in our driveway. It's good. So, all right. I got a follow from John Clay on Twitter yesterday. How about that, Dan?
What? I saw that. So I guess John's hit the bottom of the barrel.
That's
huh?
it. That is the
he's
bottom.
He's got nothing to do but follow you on Twitter?
He's like, oh, that's how you spell that name? Okay, great. I got there.
How did...
Yeah, I got an alert from Twitter. John Clay followed you. And I'm like,
so
really?
What? Did,
North Harden's
what
own?
What did you do or what did you post that John Clay
I think thought? So I have a great picture of my son from his – so – It was Thomas's birthday yesterday. I mentioned that for a segment. So I went to his school for the cupcake time in his classroom. Mm. Just to give him a hug and say hi. And my kids, okay, maybe him and younger aren't embarrassed by me being at school. You know, that kind of thing. And
well, that day's coming.
Oh, 100%. He just turned 11. My 11-year-old, I coach his academic team, and the kids have fun on the academic team. So, like, I think, like, as long as I'm there as a coach, it's okay. But like if I just showed up to like, hey man, you want a hug? He'd be like, what are you doing? Yeah. Exactly. I showed up and I snapped a cool picture of him. His teacher has a tradition: when it's your birthday, you stand on your desk, they put a birthday hat on, and all the kids sing happy birthday to you.
Mm.
And so I got a picture of him dancing on his desk, and I put it up on Twitter, and I just called him a birthday boss or something. So I'm sure what happened is someone from the station liked the picture on Twitter. It showed up on John Clay's feed. As Nick Valvano liked this picture or something. And then John saw it was me, and then he was like, oh, I know who that guy is, and then gave me a phone. So there you go. That's the guy who makes fun of me 3 days a week on
You know, it's really bad radio if we sit here and just read stuff that people wrote in the newspaper. But his article, or I guess this was his blog, right?
You know, it's funny because we laud the Herald Leader a lot because they put out a lot of content. John Clay is a huge part of that. He does a podcast, he writes columns, and he does a blog. Now, the guy is, I mean, Dan, the word prolific is thrown around a lot these days.
Mm-hmm.
But John Clay is prolific.
No, yeah, and this wherever this came from, this is a really good article. He goes over the Sweet 16 begins tomorrow, and he goes over the 16 reasons that college basketball makes no sense.
Yeah.
It's really, really a good article. And he has 16 things that have happened so far in college basketball that just, you know, make no sense. For instance, you know, the seven of the Sweet 16 teams were not in the top 25.
Oh, sure.
At the preseason. And four of them did not get a single vote in the preseason, which, you know, I've known for a long, long time, preseason polls are, you know, they're not worth 10 cents. So,
well, what's interesting is, I'll shoot this to Nick, but this article has Bobby V written all over it. The let the cake bake attitude about college basketball, right?
Mm-hmm.
I will say, I thought the most interesting thing was what he led with, that there are 11 different conferences in the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
That is the biggest sea change we've seen this year. And so when people told you it's going to be a wide open tournament, you know what? They were right.
That shows that it's right.
That is the proper take. And so I will eat crow on that one because I did not think it would be, you know, the crapshoot that people told me it was going to be, and it has absolutely turned into that.
So because of that, are we getting the right teams in the NCAA tournament?
Is the other question, right? And the answer is yes.
You think that that's a bad example because they're in the I was going to go to Tennessee that were 5-7 in their last 12 games in the
SEC. Michigan State was 7-7 and got steamrolled by Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament.
So
before the Derby point system, it was based on earnings, and a grass horse could come trotting into the Derby, right, Dan?
Right.
And I think, you know,
or the 2-year-old champion who
right.
turn three and couldn't beat anybody.
Yeah, right. Turn into a claimer, right? And so I think that having qualification standards makes sense for any kind of tournament, frankly. And so I don't know that obviously the selection committee and how they do it isn't perfect, but it's better than just, well, Izzo used to be good at this, we should just let him in again, using your two-year-old example, right? Mm-hmm. Or, I don't know, well, it's Duke, so they should get in. Or, oh, it's Louisville, they've won three championships, they should just get in. No, they were 4-28, they shouldn't get in, right? That kind of thing. So, no, I think a single elimination event doesn't show whether teams should or should not be in the tournament.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Now, if you want to argue who should have been at the beginning, that's a different conversation. If it should be the 68 best teams in the country, and you wanted to argue that with me, I'm not going to fight you about it. But then Princeton doesn't get in, and they're not in the Sweet 16. Because you didn't know that they were one of the 68 best teams. And by the way, they are. They are.
No question.
That's right. Exactly.
They've got a shot to get to the Elite Eight.
No question. No, absolutely. They got a better route than FAU does.
Yeah.
No question about it. And so, I think that the tournament shows who the best teams are by the time you get to things like the Elite Eight. Like, St. Peter's doesn't make the tournament last year if we just seed the best 68 teams according to the net or whatever, right? And then they went out and they beat Kentucky and Purdue in the same run.
Right.
I mean, that's not an accident. Right. So, I think the tournament is... That's why you don't want to mess with it is the way that they're talking about messing with it, because you're already getting, because 11 conferences are in the Sweet 16, you're already giving access to those places. You don't need to expand it to give more access to teams from, say, the Big Ten or the SEC or whatever.
Yeah, I wasn't suggesting that we expand the tournament. I think we've got plenty of teams right now.
No, I understand.
I just don't know if as you said, I don't know if the best 64 teams the way we do it now, or 68 if you want to count the play-in, I don't know if those are the best teams in the country. I don't know how else
But that's what I'm saying, Dan, is that because we have the automatic qualifier caveat, it allows teams that don't fit the usual metrics, eye test, for example, or net rankings, or KenPom, whatever it might be, to qualify for the tournament and then show that they belong in it. Hmm. FDU doesn't get in if we just see the top 68. Princeton doesn't get in. Right. FAU might just because of their gaudy record. I think they're probably an at-large team no matter what, even if they don't win their conference tournament, which they did win. But I'm not at all sure.
All comes down to is exactly what we've talked about recently, and that is, the blue bloods can't expect to have the entire. And that was one of Clay's points in his article. Of course, last year Kansas and North Carolina make it to the championship game, but the year prior to that, and this year, Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, and North Carolina don't. None of those four make it to the Sweet 16.
Right,
and so that's the direction college basketball is going. That you, because of all of the things that are involved now, I mean, you can rebuild overnight and make a competitive team.
Yeah, and for example, we always go to horse racing, but I think a Japanese horse is going to win the Kentucky Derby in the next 5 years. A Japanese horse has never won the Kentucky Derby. Does that make the Kentucky Derby worse? No, it just makes the future different than what the past was. Still the Derby. It's still the NCAA tournament when Princeton makes a Sweet 16. And so I don't mind that the talent is more spread out and that there's good coaching in many places. And I mean really good coaching. I mean, Shaka Smart's system is really good. It is really fun to watch. It is really interesting, and you can win a ton of basketball games that way.
Yep.
And so it is, to me, obviously we're seeing the Jerome Tang effect on a bunch of transfers and a 5'8 guard from Harlem, right? I mean, that's a remarkable thing.
But that 5'8 guard from Harlem can play.
Oh, no, you got to have dudes, that's for sure. But then you're going to have the outliers. Tom Izzo is an outlier, right? That he gets his teams consistently to that spot. And if he continues to do it, he'll be even more of an outlier, right? I brought it up. That's why I think that certain guys recently have retired or have been pushed out, because the changing landscape is one that is very different than how they came up. You know, they were having a conversation yesterday, Dan, and I don't know how to approach it, so I'll ask you because you were in coaching. So Bobby V and Mark Lieberman were talking about how basketball has adopted much more of a coordinator type approach to its assistant coaches. So, you know, you have an offensive assistant, you have a defensive assistant. And so one thing that has really changed is, you know, for Tom Izzo, for example, it's not him that's up barking all the time. His assistants are up calling out defensive sets and calling out, hey, this is the look that they have. To me, I feel like Izzo's been doing that for a long time because, you know, I watch a ton of his games. But didn't you have coaches based on whether they knew they had an offensive acumen or a defensive acumen?
Not in basketball.
You didn't. Okay. So that is a change then. Okay. Because I know for fact that Tom Crean was on Izzo's staff because he was an offensive guy. And he helped craft the offense that's at Michigan State now. For example, I'm using an example that was 25 years ago that he arrived.
Yeah. No, and you're right because, Louis, because of other duties that most head coaches have, your assistant coaches probably watch twice as much tape as you do. And so, and that was my point on Monday about Kentucky's assistant coaches, that, you know, you have, in today's environment, you have to have assistant coaches that have some input.
Right.
They've watched the tapes. They know, and I don't know if I'm in favor of splitting it into offense and defense.
Sure.
But they're, I mean, that's why those guys are over there.
Yeah, right.
And you watch Kentucky's bench, and Tyler Ulis and Lance Ware are the ones that are up shouting instructions. And so you have to have, especially in today's environment, when there is so much specialization in the game of basketball, you have to have people over there that recognize that and can make adjustments during the game. Now, if one's an offensive guy and one's a defensive guy, I guess that's fine. But you have to have it. It can't be a head coach up doing it all by himself. That doesn't work in today's environment.
Is that an unintentional jab at Cal?
Who said it was unintentional?
I will say, if what we hear around here and what you're saying is true, he's got to be careful with Ulis because that guy won't be there very long if they don't elevate him.
People
really like him. They think he's about to become a great coach.
Does that mean he's going to be a great coach?
No, I understand. No. What I'm saying is, he. I get that part. But it doesn't mean that someone won't poach him on the idea that he could be.
Right.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
But the problem I have with this staff is it seems, Cal, with the staff that he had,
right,
they weren't getting any players.
Oh, right. I mean, that's number one for sure. No question.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so he went completely the opposite way and said, you know, I need to get some assistants in here who can recruit. Well, that's great. So O's a great recruiter. Chin's a great recruiter. But, you know, that's, in my mind, that's just a small part of it. They've got to be, and I've said this before, I don't know if they're incapable of doing that or if Cal just doesn't let them do that. But there has to be, I mean, I see a lot of other teams. I mean, I see Norm Roberts at Kansas.
Right, yep.
5 times, 10 times a game, get up, walk over to Bill and say something. I use this example before. The guy down at Florida State with Leonard, he's in Leonard's ear the entire game. And it just because an assistant coach, you know, makes a recommendation or says something, as a head coach, that doesn't mean you have to do it, but at least there are people that are giving you some feedback to help you make good decisions as the game is going on. When was the last time you saw Orlando or Chin stand up and go over and say something to Cal?
Chin now, more than Orlando for sure.
But, yeah, but it's not very often. Time, most of the time, Cal turns to Chin and says, sit down. So,
you know how Dan knows this, by the way, Avery, is that he can suggest things to Sherry, but it doesn't mean it's going to happen.
No.
Yeah, of course not. We do our own thing.
That's not wrong. It's just interesting. And so they talked about it that way on the show, and I thought it was an interesting conversation because I think it's more of what you just described, which is the assistant's job is to give information to the head coach so he can make a decision, right? Is to give him all of the, hey, they're moving to, you know, this version of the zone that we scouted. They're doing this on offense. They're doing, you know, they're running this play, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I think what is different is I think different coaches approach that differently in that, hey, if you see it, just tell the kids. You don't need to tell me. Don't waste the 3 seconds of coming to me. Just shout out, hey, it's 22. They're running 22 or whatever you've labeled that set as, right? That kind of stuff. And so I don't know if it's a change in that or if it's just instead of having one, you know, patriarch on the sideline that is the only one who's allowed to talk.
Yeah. And
it's just
and
more democratic that way. Yeah.
It depends on the trust that you have. I mean,
for sure.
I brought this up a couple of weeks ago. I am amazed at how many college timeouts I see now, especially in important
completely
places.
Completely run
the game,
by assistants.
Like they've got to run a play with 12 seconds left to go in the game, and they've got to hit a shot to win the game, and there's an assistant coach sitting in front of them with the whiteboard drawing up the play. You never used to see that. I mean, it was the head coach drawing up that had the board and was drawing up the play.
Right.
And so it depends on how much confidence you have. And again, you know, in situations like that, I'm sure that assistant coach has seen twice as much tape on this team they're playing than the head coach has.
Yeah. Do you want to hear a silly story?
Yeah.
Since we're talking about, like, coaches from our childhood and that kind of stuff. So I coached little kid basketball when my kids were at a previous school. And now we're at a bigger school, so I don't have to coach basketball anymore. And I adopted a John Woodenism for second grade basketball. How about that? He had a rule.
Did you have the triangle of what was that thing?
The triangle of success.
Yeah.
I thought it was pyramid of success, right? No.
Pyramid. You're right.
And so he had a rule. If they haven't seen it in practice, I'm not going to draw it up in a game. So nothing new during a game. And I think that's a really good, and I guess for a long time, he didn't even have a whiteboard on the sideline. So I didn't even have one on the sideline. I would just say, hey, remember in practice when we worked on this? Go do that now. Go try that. And that's all I would do. And I stole that from Wooden. But I had an assistant coach, and if he tried to talk to the players directly, I would be very angry. I was like Cal that way.
Well, you know, and that's true on every level. I mean, when I was coaching the Nuggets and we would get in a situation and I'd try to draw up a new play,
forget it. No, that's right.
First of all, you had guys that would start running the play before the official even handed the ball to the out of bounds.
Yeah, because they're thinking instead of playing. That's right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So I mean not running something that you haven't practiced. That goes all the way up to the NBA.
Yeah, I'm sure there is some sixth grader somewhere in this town who had me as a second grade basketball coach, who still has imprinted in their brain me saying, don't think, just shoot. After, because they would get offensive rebounds and then they would look around, right? Don't think, just shoot. Don't think, just shoot. And I would say it 100 times of practice. I'm sure it's imprinted in some poor kid's brain walking around Louisville right now. Damn, Coach Rabeau. Don't think, just shoot. I'm sure of it. I'm sure it's out there. Oh, man, Issel and Louie taking you up until noon. Bobby B's still back in the saddle today. You'll have him today, and then, of course, first replay, 3 o'clock. Local programming, 7 to 6 every weekday here on ESPN 680, 105.7. We are your exclusive radio home for play-by-play of the NCAA tournament, including the Final Four and the National Championship. We're back at it tomorrow and Friday at 6 p.m. here on ESPN 680, 105.7, 93.9, will join tomorrow at 7 p.m. But if you are driving around, we will have all of those games. And a reminder again, Friday night, 9:30 pregame, 10 o'clock play-by-play with Nick Curran of the women on 93.9 over on that side. And I don't know, Dan, have you ever heard Nick Curran call a basketball game?
I don't believe so.
I will say. So Nick does the women's games for U of L, and then he does Bats AAA baseball.
Okay.
You wouldn't know it's the same dude.
Really?
Because he's got the baseball thing down where he talks to himself for 3 hours. Right? You know exactly what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But then he does the women's game, and he's excellent. He's excellent.
Does he have a color analyst on the baseball games?
I just got another text about the high five at Gulfstream. It's my life now, Dan. I'm not mad about it either. It makes me smile to the point of laughing. That's where we are. I am delirious today. What did you just ask me? Does he have a color guy for baseball?
Yeah.
No, it's just Nick.
Yeah, I can't. That's got to be the hardest job in the world.
Sean Moff does that for Louisville baseball, and it is that guy. Thank God he researches, because he fills the show so well. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
Vin Scully was the same.
Yes.
Yeah. Vin Scully was the same way. I he was so entertaining that you didn't want, and I'm guessing that's why he did it by himself. You didn't want to hear anybody else but Vin Scully. But I can't imagine having to do that yourself for 3 hours.
The thing about baseball announcing that I always admired, and Vin's one of those guys, Ernie Harwell in Detroit was one of these guys, they would start stories knowing when the inning was going to end. Like, they just knew. Like, there's two outs. No one can hit anything off a pitcher. And he's like, this one time when I was growing up in Georgia, we had a peach salesman who lived around the corner. And, I asked his daughter out to the middle school dance, and he had me over. And he starts talking about this girl. And then it turns into a 13-pitch at bat. And eventually the guy walks. And it's like, how did you know that was going to happen?
So you could finish your story.
Yeah. Like, you knew that you were going to have time to finish a story with two outs in the fourth inning. How did you know that? And who the hell is this peach salesman? I was always impressed by those guys. And Vin was absolutely one of those dudes. And Nick is a bit like that. He's got that, like, he's got that cadence for baseball. And then for basketball, it doesn't even sound like him. And not in a bad way. It's just he turns into a basketball announcer. It's very impressive. So we're sort of, I think, in this state where we forget how good the announcing is between Kaywood, then Leach. And then, you got Paul Rogers over here. You got Sean Moth on on baseball games, and then you've got, even a guy like Nick Curran who's doing, Bats games. I don't know that I listen to a lot of Bats games, I'll be very honest, but if they're on, you throw them out in the car or whatever. But did you and Mike tell, like, Kaywood stories over and over on this show?
No.
I feel like all of Kaywood stories are all the same, and not in a bad way. Like, it's just, Kaywood was Kaywood.
We told more Rupp stories than we told Kaywood stories. Okay. I mean, the most entertaining, we would, after a game, we would shower as quickly as we possibly could to get to our cars to listen to Kaywood and Coach Rupp's postgame show. It was the most entertaining thing. Kaywood would get to ask about two questions a show. Mm. And Coach Rupp would just go on and on and on and forget people's names. And it was so entertaining. I mean, there were guys running to the shower as soon as he left the locker room so that they could get to the car in time to hear it. It was, those were very entertaining.
That's great. Man, oh, man. Yeah, lots of, every story I hear, there's tobacco involved. There's curmudgeon-y involved. There's, just kind of always the same story. So anyways, all right. You bring up all these assistants and all these things, and there's another article about shaking up the staff again at UK. And here's the deal, Dan. And I'll be ugly before you comment here.
Okay.
At some point, though, there is one constant, and his name is John Calipari. And we need to stop looking down the bench to pretend that it matters. Text in, Cal could have Rupp Wooden Auerbach on his staff and he wouldn't listen. That's kind of, you didn't say it like that, but it does feel like I mean, it feels a little bit like that, frankly. Does it matter who his assistants are as far as in-game play?
Not if they have any if they don't have any input. I mean, you could put, you know, 3-4 guys over there that didn't know anything about basketball, and it wouldn't have an effect if you're not going to listen to them. But maybe that's one of the changes. You know, a lot has been written here recently about Cal's reluctance to change anything, and you know, until that part changes, it doesn't matter who you have over there.
Yeah. So that's the other part of this is it. Unless there's, and this is the other, this is the thing. Because we talked about it yesterday, the relationships at UK now, there is no Dwayne Peavy, there is no Mike Pratt to get in Cal's ear at all, right? So even if there was going to be a 2% or 3% change about how Cal does things, that person might not be there right now. Now, maybe it's a Tyler Ulis, maybe, I don't know. Once in a while, it is the former player that looks at you and says, hey, coach, this, this, and this. Like if LaFonso Ellis came to you and said, hey, Dan, you know, you should try this, this, and this, you would take LaFonso really seriously. Because you really respect him, right?
Yeah,
I think absolutely. That's the example for you is a guy like LaFonso. Maybe that's Tyler Ulis. I don't know who that is, but there are very few people, once you get to the who Cal is and what he's built, that can actually approach him and say, hey, we got to try this. I think with a guy like KP, for example, it's the opposite. I think that he's got his ways and he's going to do things his way, but I think he's so new at this that if he got advice from a number of different places, he would take it really seriously. He would at least listen to it. And so that's where we are. That's why these empires end, is because guys like Cal get to that point and they just won't listen to people. And so I just...
Well, and in all due respect, Tyler Ulis isn't that guy. Tyler Ulis is 24 years old and Cal's 64. That he's not the guy.
Okay, maybe. I'm using that example because he's on the bench, Dan. But if it's an Anthony Davis or if it's a, I don't know, a guy from Memphis, you know, one of the guys from Memphis. I don't know. Maybe Marcus Camby can get his ear. I don't know. I don't know who it is. But it's just one of those things. Because it's not working. The last couple of years isn't working.
No.
One tournament win in 4 years is not enough. And
right.
I can bitch and moan about titles being the standard and people being unhappy without it. But the standard should also not be just making it to the round of 32 and losing to a bunch of transfers at Kansas State. I mean, that's not good either. So,
yeah.
All right, Dan, take us to break here. Texter asking us to extend the show to 3 hours. 3 hours.
Dan does not like me that much. 2 hours is 2 hours is perfect.
Yeah.
Some days 2 hours is 2 hours too much. This hour of the show has been brought to you by our friends at Kentucky Tourism, KentuckyTourism.com. When you're ready to explore the Bluegrass State, well, I screwed that up.
See, we can't do 3 hours, people.
When you're ready to explore the outdoors, there's no better place than the Bluegrass State. Plan your summer getaway today at KentuckyTourism.com.
Metro College is a program that helps students pay for tuition, and I didn't believe it. You have to work third shift 5 days a week. It's a great and rewarding thing when you graduate. I would do it all over again, just like I just did.
You know those buddies who magically become medical professionals when you're not at the top of your game? The ones who say,
come on, muscle through it.
But then also say,
hey, you should probably see my specialist.
Or surgery or pain meds. It's almost always false, false, and false. Athletico's physical therapists, the same therapists who work with professional athletes, can tackle those little aches and pains from the start, before they become big ones. So next time, don't believe everything you hear. Instead, start with Athletico. Schedule your free assessment at athletico.com.